rather wait till we get this thing divided and then come back and address it at a later time.
Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you and the committee, I would prefer to go ahead with the balance of the bill dealing with the civil penalties. I think
that's
they are
fine.
A separate issue that
we're
ready to deal with.
What we've done. Okay, if you would go ahead and address the remainder of the bill, deleting the water slide question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill dealing with civil penalties does basically two things. It makes uniform civil penalty procedures across the several programs in the Building Codes Division, and it enhances collection procedures on unpaid civil penalties. Civil penalties imposed under administrative process controlled by ORS Chapter 183 have been adopted by the legislature to help regulatory agencies achieve compliance without resorting to the court system. Civil penalties provide an effective and expeditious means of bringing about compliance with statutory requirements. For the most part, we can achieve compliance without actually bringing a civil penalty action. Our problem has been that the procedures for implementing civil penalties differ depending on when the civil penalty authority was granted by the legislature. In the elevator program, for example, we must go to the local circuit court and seek a restraining order. In the mobile home program, we must go to the small claims court. In the structural program, we must work through the local district attorney. This bill would make uniform civil penalty procedures provisions across programs and is patterned after the civil penalty procedures in our electrical program, where the final order is issued by the electrical board. This bill also allows unpaid civil penalties to be docketed as a judgment lien. This would give the division an alternative to the Department of Revenue in attempting to collect unpaid civil penalties. Although these streamlined civil penalty procedures are designed to make the civil penalty a more effective deterrent to those who ignore statutory requirements, the primary focus of the Building Codes Division is to achieve voluntary compliance. To this end, the division is working to develop a public information program to explain the necessity of obtaining proper permits and inspections and the use of licensed personnel in the interest of public safety. To the extent we can eliminate inadvertent noncompliance, civil penalties will be used as a last resort for repeat offenders and those who purposely evade statutory requirements. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have on the civil penalty aspects of this bill.
Thank you. Questions? I always look up this way, Dick, because I know you got one.
You're out of time, Springer.
I'm curious if the department has any idea in terms of whether they'd adopt a rule or guidelines in terms of for first offense, generally of a certain severity. You know, in other words, will the public or will people have any expectation in terms of the rules, generally how this discretion is going to be guided, you know, for what may be a trivial or insignificant offense that requires just putting someone back on track. I assume you're not going out to bludgeon people $1,000 the first time they forget to dot an I or cross a T. How will we in the public know generally what guidelines are going to exist other than if you have some rules, or is there any policy that's been developed at this point to try to clarify that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, we do have the $1,000 maximum civil penalty for any offense, and most of the boards have adopted rules which differentiate on that penalty for a first offense, for example, so that they differentiate between a first offense and a second offense. And in many cases, the first offense penalty is something like $100 or $200. We have been working with our boards for the past year to clarify these rules and to allow the staff some more discretion in setting these penalties. Excuse me. Some of the boards have been more cooperative than others in allowing this to happen. But I feel confident within the next 6 months we'll have all of our boards differentiating between first offenses and second offenses, and also allowing the staff to develop settlement procedures. We can stipulate to compliance, and to the extent the offender agrees not to do this particular action again, that we'd be allowed to drop the civil penalty. So we are working to clarify that.
Thank you.
Further questions?
This is a broad bill, more than what it shows here, isn't it? The Director of Commerce and all the boards can, upon their decision, immediately turn it over to the revenue for collection. Is this not right? No, they collect themselves.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McCarthy, we attempt to elicit payment when we do have a final order in the civil penalty. We tend to attempt to work with the offender to make payment directly to the department. And in some cases, we're successful. In some cases, we're not. And the reason we've suggested adopting the judgment lien authority here is that this is used in other areas. Builders Board, for example, has judgment lien authority that allows them to docket the final order as a judgment lien so that they can collect that penalty. We have a problem collecting penalties. We have right now over $10,000 on the books that are uncollectible. And we send them off to the Department of Revenue, and for a 15% fee, they will, first of all, look at their files and see if the individual has a tax return, or tax refund coming back from their income taxes, and they will garnish that. But we've been we've gotten very little success in doing this. It seems that these things fall through the cracks when they go to the Department of Revenue, and we've gotten very little in the way of collection from them. So what we're looking for is some other leverage that we just don't have people ignoring the final orders and the fines, which in many cases they are now doing.
You through, Representative Carter?
I'm not about to vote for this. They're going to have to find some other way of collecting theirs besides the apartment.
Well, we haven't got through it yet. Representative Jones?
I'm not making my rash decision yet. Representative McCarty, but you indicated $10,000 in civil penalties. Are these long-standing old ones, or are you just having that much difficulty on a regular basis? What is your normal amount of collection or assessment of fees in a year, for example, or whatever period of time? I don't know.
It's difficult to tell, Representative Johnson, so we've only instituted an enhanced compliance procedure within the last year, and within the last year we've accumulated $10,000 in unpaid penalties.
But my question would be, what have you assessed? I mean, is that 1%, 5%? What? You have $10,000 in uncollected.
Yes.
How much have you collected?
I don't know the exact figures, Representative, but I believe it's probably less than $3,000 for the year.
Ooh, 30%.
That's a heck of a percentage left uncollected.
That's right. Yeah, well, our main concern, again, is to achieve compliance, and we feel that if an individual is free to ignore the civil penalty, it really isn't very effective. And so that's why we're asking for some more effective means to go after these offenders. And we have to recognize also that in many cases, unless the person does have some real property, the judgment lien is not going to do us much good, because unless there's some property leaned against, we're not going to collect anything.
Continue, please.
But what you're asking for is a lien not necessarily related to the area under which you have penalized the individual. Unlike a builder's board who is going to lien properties in relationship to the building, correct? You're asking for civil penalties to be able to be leaned against whatever property that person may own. Normally a builder has something they're building in that process. For example, if you're looking at, let's say elevators, what would you do? Would you put a lien on the building itself or the person who's operating? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I think I understand your question now. What we're asking for is the same authority the Builders Board has, because basically what this does is reference ORS 18370, 350 through 370, which are the basic judgment lien statutes, and there they speak only to real property. And in the case of the elevator owner, it would be, if the elevator owner is the same as the building owner, then the lien would go against the building. But again, it wouldn't be collectible until that building was sold and the title was transferred.
But you could lien the elevator owner's home.
Mm-mm.
That's my question.
The judgment lien Representative, judgment lien penalty under 18 ORS 18370 goes against all real property that's recorded by the individual.
So that is correct. So what I'm saying is that it doesn't have to relate at all to what the penalty is. It can be assessed against or liened anything that person owns as real property.
Any real property that's recorded in the county where he lives, yes.
Firehouse, isn't it?
Well, I was under that because I felt it would, you know, you're talking about a business that would be separate from, unless they put it up for some kind of collateral, it would be exempt from, one would be exempt from the other.
Well, Mr. Chair, if the business were a corporation, it could only go against the corporate assets.
That I realize. So then actually you create two standards. If someone's smart enough to incorporate, then they escape that problem.
Well, their personal assets would certainly be free of that if they were incorporated.
That's what I'm saying. Representative McCarty.
Essentially, what this thing makes, it makes these boards judge, adjudicator, prosecutor, and collector of all these things.
This is not a new concept, though. We've met that every session I've been here, and it's not new. Representative McCarty, and it did me too when I first heard it. And
we don't need any court systems as long as we got them.
Well, the concept that was based on the fact that they had two options. One was to shut them down, and the other one was to fine. And this is what, you know, I'd come into understanding that, which is the lesser of two evils will still get the job done. Am I correct in my assumption?
That's right, Mr. Chair. What we're looking for here is compliance, and the judgment lien authority is merely one way to bring pressure on people who ignore the statutes and requirements. And the whole administrative process, perhaps I'd like to respond to Representative McCarthy's position here. The whole administrative process under Chapter 183 is designed to give someone their due process rights while at the same time making an administrative determination whether they're in compliance or not without going into the court system. The impossibility of using the court system in many cases comes about from the pressures that a local district attorney has, for example, in dealing with other types of cases. So these kinds of cases tend not to get handled by the local district attorney. So in effect, we have no procedures to enforce compliance.
McCarty.
Okay, I take the reverse side of the person. Now, if somebody disagrees with your court or your committees, hearings, whatever, administrative hearings is what they are, they have to go to the Court of Appeals to adjudicate it. And an ordinary, reasonable, prudent man cannot do that effectively under any circumstances. And I feel that if somebody who disagrees with these arbitrary and capricious boards, that they ought to have the same rights as a board does. If you want to collect your fees,
excuse me, before you go on, I'm going to declare this as a subcommittee. We no longer have a quorum. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I had to do that.
I don't know what the procedure was there, but gee, you know, this puts a whole lot of power into these little administrative hearings, and there is no recourse for the person coming up against you. And this is what I'm objecting to, because we have to go into the Court of Appeals for any differences if we disagree with your opinion.
Well, I think I'd have to disagree with you, Representative McCarty, because there are procedures.
Let him answer.
Okay. Go ahead.
Under Chapter 183, a person is allowed to be represented by an attorney at these hearings. There is an appeal process to the particular board, which issues the final orders. And at that point, then the next appeal step is to the Court of Appeals. And that's uniform across the board in Chapter 183. Now, we have a situation with our electrical board that was inserted that allows the individual to appeal to the local circuit court as well as the Court of Appeals. And realistically, what that has meant to us is if, for example, we had a licensing issue where a person was cited for working unlicensed, and went through the process, through the hearing, through the appeal to the electrical board, was found in violation of the statute. So he took the $500 penalty to the local circuit court, And we found that it would cost us over $1,000 to send the Attorney General to represent us to that circle court, so we had to drop the penalty. And effectively, it nullified the action and the expense that we spent trying to bring this person into compliance, because we simply couldn't afford, cost-wise, to continue on with the case. And again, I think what the administrative procedures are developed for is to allow an agency that has the authority to enforce the statutes which the legislature has given them to do this in an expeditious, economical manner, while at the same time protecting the individual's due process rights. But effectively, with the requirement that we'd have to take everything into court to bring about compliance, would really nullify the intent of many of the statutes, given the costs and the time delays going into the court system.
Okay, how much does it cost an individual to go into the circuit court, and how much does it cost an individual to go into the Court of Appeal if he were represented by an attorney?
Representative McCarthy, I could only guess at those fees, but what I'm told is it costs between $500 and $1,000 to do both, that the cost in attorney fees are not substantially different for either one of them.
But if an individual is willing to pay $500 to $1,000 to go into circuit court, seemed to me, if you agree with what you can also, when you do go into circuit court, you can ask for attorney's fees too. So you'd get your money back if you were right, wouldn't you? So there wouldn't be any loss of attorney's fees if you were right.
Well, Representative McCarthy, I think there's in my mind, a difference of opinion on how collectible that statute is. It seems like the individual who brings the defense can collect his attorney's fees, but the state can't. So it doesn't go both ways.
No. Are you sure of that?
That's my understanding of it. That it's a state.
I have been hit with attorney's fees when I've gone and to the.
You are not a state agency, though, Representative McCarthy. He's speaking from a state agency standpoint.
Yeah, the state agency did get attorney's fees against me. So I don't know. You know, it's either I've been subjected to wrong interpretation.
Representative Phillips.
Perhaps I could make some comments, and I don't know what your personal experience might have biased you one way or another on this issue. The whole appeals and administrative hearing process was to avoid the court system, purposely to assist the public. That's why it was set up that way, for timeliness. They have specific periods of times in which they have to have their hearing held by. If you want to appeal to the administrator, you can't appeal to that administrator. If you want to beyond that, you can go to the Court of Appeals. It was strictly set up, and if you review the legislative history throughout all of state government, not just the Department of Commerce, the reason we did it that way many years ago was to assist the public in their appeals process and not be caught up in the court system when there were unreasonable delays and unreasonable costs. And if you would look at the expense breakdown for the public in a process like this, you'll find that they in fact do save money through their hearing, the agency hearings process. But may I suggest, Mr. Chair, that it might be better, rather than to hold them and discuss their particular agency hearing process, that if members of the committee are interested in that, perhaps we could get the director of the Department of Commerce, or perhaps even better, somebody from the Attorney General's office over to discuss with them model rules and the whole entire hearings process, and they can give some history on that.
I'm glad, because we're getting short of time, I'm going to call on Representative McCarthy one more time, and I want to give Mr. Fender a shot at this.
Representative Phillips, I'm thinking about introducing a bill to eliminate the Tax Examiner's Board, simply because they're filled with a bunch of people that have no idea what administrative rules, laws, or anything else about carrying on, that they're full of. It's a kangaroo court, all they have to do is say you're guilty, and then they collect the fine. And there's no appeal for a tax preparer, because he cannot afford to go into the Court of Appeals. And this is what the problem is.
Yeah,
kangaroo courts, administrating laws, crazy.
Okay, I'd be glad to discuss this with you, but that's not the issue now.
This is not the issue.
Okay,
Director of Commerce, right?
Joe, you, I'd like to turn to Mr. Fender.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We had specifically asked to remain within the criminal section in terms of enforcement. We feel very strongly about that. Our mobile industry requires that we have immediate action to ensure public safety. Our devices are either safe or they're unsafe, because if they don't have a sticker on them, they haven't been inspected. We have a very differing sort of situation than fixed structures do. Accordingly, when we went and explained our situation to the Department of Commerce, the director accepted our position, and this legislation has been prepared, was prepared prior to that. We, in our language that we will submit to the committee administrator, what we are asking is that a peace officer have the right to demand from any operator proof of a valid operation permit. And if a peace officer cannot be presented with proof of a valid operator's permit, much the same as the registration to your automobile, that the operator be immediately cited and the device shut down. We have got to be in a regulatory position where we're not in an administrative never-never land. We want a go, no-go kind of a system. That will ultimately provide greater public safety and be more cost-effective both to government and to the industry. We feel that the failure to comply should remain criminal because of the public safety questions involved in operating a device that does not meet the applicable standards that are incorporated within the code. If we were the type of device that were freely available for inspectors, you know, 5 working days a week, we would see a civil process as being appropriate. But under the circumstances, Section 4 of the bill, which addresses the carnival and amusement industry, really is not appropriate, not consistent with the arrangements we made with the department. But we would like to continue in any sort of subcommittee activity that you would have in this area to work with the department, because we have an excellent working arrangement with them, and we have improved ride safety as a result of that. And I would be happy to leave copies of the language with your administrator so we can go from there.
Okay, we're getting late on time. We're going to split the question on the bill. We've taken the testimony. We will have another hearing on this. We ran into a time problem with a committee really based as a subcommittee now because of membership. I think we've taken what we can today, and I would like to close the hearing on House Bill 2028, and the committee administrator will, along with you two, will get this thing straightened out with Legislative Council, and then we can proceed at another time with a hearing on strictly the rights and mobility and the civil penalty issue and separate the water slides officially. Okay, House Bill 2028 hearing is over. We are adjourned.